Your source for everything paranormal.
Para-X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Shall call. Live you must, and let to live. Fairly take, and fairly give. Do what thou will, if it harms none. By the magic of all, may it be done. Nine woods in the cauldron go, as above, so below. Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet, everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, the music you just heard was by Adrian von Ziegler. He's really talented. I love a lot of his stuff. And it's called The Morrigan, and that's who we will be talking about tonight with my guest, Courtney Weber. Courtney's a Wiccan priestess, a writer, tarot advisor, metaphysical teacher, and a social activist living up in Oregon. She's the author of Bridget and Tarot for One. And she leads workshops throughout the United States. And we're going to be talking about her new book, The Morrigan. There you go, matching the song to the show. Anyway, Courtney, welcome back. It's been forever.
It has been forever. I was so excited when you reached out. I love doing the show, and I am delighted to be back.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Well, I'm delighted to read your books because they're really, really good. And I learned a lot out of this book. I mean, I read them for pleasure. I read them because I need to read them as a host. But I learned so much. I jump into these books. I'm thinking, oh, I'm so lucky to be able to be that, to know that the books are out there, that I get to read them. You know, I mean, lay people may not know they're there, but I get all the good stuff. So I'm really thrilled when people like you who write really wonderful books write new ones, because I get all excited and run after you and tell you to come over.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, so let's kind of start at the beginning, because there are no doubt some people listening in who don't know who the Morrigan is. So how about giving her a proper introduction?
So it's such a big question. But she is an Irish goddess coming mainly out of the Iron Age, and she seemed to have gone really dormant for a while when Christianity became the dominant religion in Ireland and was really came back into the fold back in probably the late 19th century. People started talking about her again, and she certainly became a very, very popular goddess in the late 20th and early 21st century among neo-pagans. And she is a goddess of a lot of things that most people would find kind of scary. She's most known for being a goddess of warfare, but she is also a goddess who, well, I wouldn't say she is a goddess of death or goddess of the dead. She certainly has a lot of dealings with the dead and has certainly has manifestations of the Morrigan certainly bring out warnings about impending deaths. And so there's certainly a relationship between her and one of the greatest fears and mysteries of life. Mm-hmm. She has some kind of relationship with the fairies, or the good neighbors, as they are often called in Ireland. And she's very much a shapeshifter in that she can change, she can and does change her form into different animals and causes all kinds of mayhem. I think one of the things that is most challenging about the Morrigan is it's hard to really tell what kind of goddess that she is, because as soon as you put her in that box, she tends to slip out of it and become something else. And it's very difficult to tell, both in the mythology and also when she appears in people's lives, is she on your side or is she bringing misfortune into it? Or does she arrive just before misfortune shows up as a herald of the misfortune that's to come? And so she's a goddess where you really can't always make assumptions about her intentions. And I feel that a lot of times her modern devotions really mirror the way that she appears in different mythologies, because you'll have two very different people devoted to the Morrigan who've had very different experiences with her that seem to conflict with one another. And then you see her in some of the great Irish epics doing the same thing to the characters there, where she's mm-hmm. helping some and thwarting others, and you can't, and then thwarting the people that she just helped and then helping the people she just thwarted. You can't always tell where she's at. And so, with that, I also think that she can be a terribly funny goddess, and the way that she challenges some of the, particularly the male characters in the myths, that she's very, she's funny. When you read them out loud, some of these stories will actually make people laugh.
It's interesting, though. I mean, okay, so why did you choose to write about her particularly, especially since, you know, the rumors that surround her would kind of, and what you just explained, make most people run in the other direction?
Well, for a couple of different reasons. One, I travel a lot for my day job. And mm-hmm. when I travel for my day job, I will always go visit the local metaphysical stores and talk to the shop owners and ask them what are people looking for right now? And I was hearing pretty frequently that people were looking for books on the Morrigan, which, you know, to make it very clear, there already were and are quite a few very, very good resources in the Morrigan already available. But, you know, sometimes people are looking for something a little different, or mm-hmm. they've already read those and are looking for more, or different distributors have different parts of the country where they tend to frequent. So for a host of reasons that I hadn't even thought about writing one, because it seemed like there were so many excellent books that were already on the market. Mm-hmm. But I thought about it, and one of the things that I try to offer with my work is a way of connecting the experiential with the academic. And mm-hmm. a lot of times, especially with the Celtic religions or gods, for some reason, there you have either the schools that are very, very academic, and then you have the schools that are all purely experiential. And mm-hmm. I believe that there is room for a middle road.
Right.
And I feel there are a lot of people that are looking for that middle road. And so that's something that I tried to do with this. And also she helped me out, because I went through a pretty challenging time. I think when I came on to your show to talk about Bridget, I talked about how she overhauled my life in many ways, because I was making a lot of bad choices, and she mm-hmm. you know, shook them all out, and like the Smith worker pounded out what wasn't working and brought in what was. Well, with the Morrigan, I was making good choices. You know, my life was in stable order. I was, you know, very grounded, settled, and practical, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But I was not in a good place in spirit. We, you know, I became incredibly burned out with witchcraft and magic, and left New York City. And, you know, I'm still digging my way out of that burnout, which is a journey I'm looking at with my current book that I'm writing on about a different goddess. Mm-hmm. But and I think that sometimes, especially those of us that are in leadership, we put our own work to the side, and I don't want to sound like that it's a martyrdom thing. I think it's a kind of laziness, actually, because for me, it was a lot easier and a lot more preferable to focus on everybody else's issues but not focus on mine. Mm-hmm. And then I had a nice excuse not to focus on my issues because I was busy taking care of everybody else.
There you go.
Yeah, right. It was very, very convenient. So I'm not making myself sound like a saint. No, I was just being a lazy spiritual person. But that stuff will catch up with you. And so I had a number of things that were really difficult that came up and met me as soon as we left New York. I had not been dealing with my depression or this old eating disorder that seemed to keep kicking around. And so I needed to address those two issues. And also my husband and I have been on a fertility journey for quite a few years, and it had hit a pretty painful dead end. And so we had to figure out a different way to continue that journey. And so that's, you just kind of, I said in the book, I found myself in a really dark place where people really couldn't reach me. But the Morgan was who I found down there. And I wasn't looking for someone to fix things or to save me or to pull me out of it. But I was looking for someone who could help me navigate this rather difficult, dark time. And that's goes in exactly what the Morgan is all about. Mm-hmm. So it was a journey to help people that were interested in the Morgan, but it was also a journey to help myself. Finally, after all this time, actually start doing the work on me. So
time it happens. Yes. Eventually right? You'll get right around to that when you really need it the
I
most.
Know.
All right, so what happened during your visit to the Cave of Cats in Ireland? That's kind of an interesting story.
Yeah, so this is for those who aren't familiar with it, this is the Cave of the Cats, also known as the Wootnagat, which is a natural cave in Roscommon in Ireland near the Rathcrohan burial complex. So it's connected with a couple of different myths about the Morgan, but the one that is most common is actually more colloquial, in that it was believed that she entered the world or went into the fairy world on Samhain. And this cave was really feared by people long into Christian Ireland. They believed that that cats, like these giant black cats, would emerge from the cave on Samhain night. Mm. And so that's why they called it the Cave of the Cats. They also called it the Gateway to Hell because it was a very scary experience. Yeah. And the Morgan is not subtle with her imagery. So to get into this cave, you have to crawl into a hole in the ground at the base of a thorn tree. And the hole is about as wide as the average human's shoulder, so to speak. Uh-huh. And then you have to go through this narrow tunnel that slopes downward, and it goes about 6 feet underground. And then it opens up into this round womb-like cavern. So uh-huh. You're in this womb-like shape that is 6 feet underground. Mm. And then to come back out, you've got to crawl back through this very narrow tunnel and then push yourself through this little hole, and then you're out in the sunshine covered in goo. So it is truly an experience in death and rebirth. And mm-hmm. I've been to the cave quite a few times. And when I've been there before, I've been with groups. And so I've been leading the groups sometimes, and would be focused on what was going on with other people and not so much with myself. And this time I felt like I needed to go in alone, which to me was scary. I'm kind of claustrophobic, and although I've never been afraid of the cave when I was in it, I would often have nightmares about the cave when I was away from it, which may sound very strange.
Yeah.
But when I went in this time, my sweet husband sat outside, and I went in alone, and I turned the flashlight off and just sat there in this absolute pure darkness for a while. And in that space, I felt like I had this sense of how great and strong the stones of the earth were, and that they could certainly hold me up, and they could also hold up the things I've been trying to carry alone. And I felt for the first time like I was no longer carrying the burdens and the sadness and the challenges that I had been struggling with for the previous year, and that suddenly somebody could hold those things. And it with a little bit of a call on my ego, like, do you really think you're so powerful that you can hold all this stuff by yourself? Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, I guess not. No, you're not that powerful. Nobody is.
Yeah.
So it was a beautiful, a beautiful moment, but it also was, it was a sad one too. I sang while I was in the cave. My relationship with singing has also been something of a complicated one, because when I was much younger, I wanted to be a professional singer, and I have a little bit of a pitch problem, so that really wasn't going to happen. So that was a very difficult thing to acknowledge, and I wouldn't sing for years, and would not admit that I actually really did love singing. So that, because to me, I've been in the sense that if you aren't trying to make money at it, why should you bother doing it at all? It's the nice capitalist Kool-Aid that I'd drunk somewhere along the way, and realized that, you know, it's okay to sing just because you like the way it feels, not because you have a good voice or anyone thinks you have a good voice or anything like that. So I found myself singing in the cave, and I cried in there, and it was this very, there were these drops of condensation that were falling in the cave and that were plinking alongside my tears in the mud below. And this very strange sound to be crying, like the cave was weeping with me, or so to speak. So yeah, it was powerful. I must have been in there maybe 20 minutes, but it seems like a lot longer. Wow. And I came out covered in goo.
Rebirth, covered in goo.
Rebirth, for sure.
That's how it works. You know, one thing I didn't realize about the Morrigan was that she was classified as one of the Fae. And is she really that, or just is it speculative, or what?
I would never presume to say that she is or is not a member of the Fae. I would never personally presume to say that she is or is not the Fae, or is not anything. I don't know if she's a fairy or not. People get pretty heated about it. I know that I did a book talk not too long ago, and just even when I started talking about the Morrigan as possibly the Fae, a woman in the audience got very angry and said, "She is not a fairy." Okay, let me finish what I was saying, and we can certainly come back to that. And so what I say to people is, I don't know if she's a fairy or not, but I do know that she acts like a fairy.
Okay.
She certainly has plenty of leeway to go in and out of the fairy mounds, which is something that very few, if any, other Irish deities really did within their mythologies. But she was the one that at the end of the great battles could go into the fairy mounds and declare that the battle was over, and she could also come to Earth and then declare among the mortals that the battle was over.
Mm-hmm.
But she acts like a fairy in that she steals cattle, which is something that the fairies were typically blamed for. She could bless or curse just because she was in the mood to do one or the other. And she was in control of many of the elements of nature. So in some of the battles, she and her sisters would bring down storms of fire and storms of hail, which is probably a euphemism for a lightning storm. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that she had control over the elements, and the fairies were often blamed for foul weather or for famine or for, for cattle just disappearing, that you look at it, you say she's acting like one. Whether or not she is one, I don't know. Sometimes I say she definitely has a timeshare in the fairy world. Whether or not she's a permanent resident is not for me to say, but she's got something over there.
Well, right? She's so multifaceted, you know? I mean, like you said, what I really like is that you call her the goddess with the warning label.
Yes.
And that's probably very true. I mean, and you talk about that she's the personification of darkness and light working hand in hand, and both scary and, as you said, restorative. It's weird. You know, I mean, you just don't know how to look at it from any particular standpoint. Go ahead.
Well, when we're looking at these really old deities, and what people have to remember understand about the Morrigan is that everything we know about her was written down by Christian monks several hundred years after Ireland was very much a Christian country. Mm-hmm. And so the stories existed in oral tradition, but the Celts, the Celtic Irish didn't write any text down. None of the Celtic countries did. That was their a cultural choice, so to speak, and that they believed oral tradition was the best way to preserve their mm-hmm. legacy, and it was better for their mind. Right. And, you know, that's true in some ways because parchment can be destroyed, but a story, if you remember it, cannot. The challenge is that when oral treatment practice is lost, well, then so are the stories. So what I tell people is if you imagine that these monks are writing these stories down, first of all, they're really bored, okay, because it's the year 500 in Ireland and you're a monk.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You don't have a lot going on that's very interesting or spicy, okay? That's just the way things were. And then also the stories that tend to be preserved in our mythology all over the world tend to be the scary stories.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, when people think about Christianity and they think about Jesus, first one of the things they talk about is he rose from the dead. Okay. That's kind of a scary story. Or they talk about the crucifixion. That's a scary story. And the same thing in secular culture too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Most of we talk about Shakespeare. I ask people, unless you studied Shakespeare like I did in college, do you know the plot of As You Like It?
Mm-hmm.
Most people say no. But if I say, well, then tell me about A Midsummer Night's Dream or tell me about Macbeth. Mm-hmm. And people say, oh, one's about fairies and one's about witches and murder. Mm-hmm. And Romeo and Juliet, it's about they died.
Yeah.
Right. So those are the stories that stick with us.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of our mythologies are influenced, like Lord of the Rings. Even if you don't, if you've never seen the movies, you're aware basically that there's elves in it, and there are there's magic in it, and then there's Mount Doom and the Ring and Frodo, and there's a journey involved, and there's some scary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with Star Wars and that sort of thing. So the stories that get preserved by memory are the ones that are more about adventure or death and things like that. So you imagine some very elderly person sitting down with a monk trying to retell the story that their great-grandfather told them when they were five. They're mm-hmm. most likely going to remember the ones that are super bawdy and super violent and super scary because that's just what people tend to remember.
Yes.
And then also I think that the monks might have just been more interested in writing down stories about this goddess who would you know, have sex by the river and then would go and murder people because they're bored, right? That'd be a lot more interesting to write those stories down than the ones mm-hmm. about the goddess walking along naming the flowers, because those mm-hmm. are the ones that people, those are the stories people are going to forget.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, sensationalism works every time, for sure.
You said it much more succinctly than I did. So we have these collections of stories of the Morgan behaving in this very aggressive, sometimes violent, sometimes angry manner, and we just don't. There may have been plenty of other stories in which she was very gracious mm-hmm. and she was very kind, right? Mm-hmm. We don't, but we never are going to know. So these are the stories that that's one of the reasons why that we don't have a whole lot that we know about her, and aside from these very scary stories. Now, I'm afraid I forgot your original question. I went on this long rant. I don't remember what you were doing.
You know what? I'm so busy listening. I think it was just about so many different sides of her and stuff.
So many different sides. Yeah. And so, and also these stories were probably collected over a couple of different centuries in very different parts of the country. I mean, Ireland is geographically not that large of a country, but before cars and buses and telephones and all those sorts of things, people didn't travel around as much. And mm-hmm. so the stories are going to be very, very different depending on where you go. And, you know, there's also the theory, and this one's hotly contested, that the Morgan came from a land goddess at certain, mm-hmm. a certain point. In some translations, her name means the Great Queen, mm-hmm. which in some interpretations, the land of Ireland itself was considered a queen that the kings would marry. So it's reasonable to think that in some cases, these may be stories of a very ancient earth goddess. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the reasons that's controversial now is because we tend to, as a whole, think of the earth goddess as constantly kind and ever giving.
Mm-hmm.
But that really reflects more about where we are technologically speaking and in our relationship with farming, because right now in most, I mean, I'm not going to speak for all parts of the world, at least in the Western world, If somebody is hungry, it's not because there's not enough food. It's because of economic inequality.
Right.
So the earth is producing plenty of food in many areas. In fact, there's an overabundance and there's waste. Mm-hmm. So we have this situation in which we believe that
bless you.
Sorry, listeners.
I just coughed. You sneezed.
Growing out here. Yeah. And so we have this concept that the earth goddess is very kind and nurturing and always forgiving. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't always the case in even the parts of the world that we know now. And a lot of times when you're looking at indigenous stories, the goddesses being cruel or kind tended to reflect the relationship the people had with the land. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Ireland is very fertile in many areas, but in some areas it's really not. It's rocky and craggy and it's difficult to grow crops. And so it's possible that in regions where the Great Queen, so to speak, was not producing very much food, that she may have seemed very cruel, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at reflections from many different eras. The Iron Age Celtic world was from about 1000 BCE to about 500 Common Era. And so that's like 1500 years of different experiences that people are going to have with their land and with their gods. And also, we don't really know everything that was happening culturally. Like even in some, the book I'm working on now is on Hecate, and there's a belief that Hecate shifted from being this great cosmic mother to being a very scary goddess of death and a very baneful witchcraft because of some society upheaval where people stopped trusting the gods. And so sometimes there may have been things going on in Celtic Ireland among the people that left them very bitter and toward their own deities, which is a mm-hmm. very common human experience. So we're looking at a reflection of a time we don't understand and we never will. And so the best thing that we can do is accept that. So there's going to be things about it that are very different than what we know now. But then, you know, just do our best to let them guide us in whatever way is appropriate for us and now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we're working with somebody that's an enigma and contradictions, you kind of have to go with the flow. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, the right thing. And we're going to take a break in a minute, but I wanted to say the minute I posted that banner, I started getting people, you know, on Facebook and everything, lots and lots of people came forward praising the Morrigan for the wonderful things that she's done for them over the years.
Yeah.
And so she, you know, it's like, and you said earlier, and this is what reminded me of that she seems to be popping up in a lot of people's lives lately. When you said, you know, you go and check out the stores and see what's kind of not trendy, that's not the right word, but popular.
Well, people are, yeah, popular.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think maybe she's coming back and being so well-known again or reminding people of her again. Maybe something's up, and that's something to ponder. And I think, why don't you ponder that for just a minute? Because we're going to take a quick break, about 2 minutes, and then we'll be back. And let me think what you... share your thoughts about that, okay?
For sure.
All right.
Don't go away. There's more Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks right after these important messages.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the paranormal view, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear... Line.
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's the Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network. missed an episode of Stirring the Cauldron? Then be sure to check out MarlaBrooks.com and check out the archive. And while you're there, check out Marla's weekly Witch's Oracle card reading. Explore the site to find many great resources, such as information on tarot, oracle readings, metaphysical consultations, and links to all of Marla's books. That's MarlaBrooks.com. Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And yes, here we are again, talking with author Courtney Weber, and we're going to be talking, and we're still going to be talking about her new book, The Morrigan. And just before break, I was posing the question that because The Morrigan seems to be popping up a lot more here and there, is there a reason for it, or is it just kind of happening for no reason in particular?
And it's such a good question. And again, I'm not going to presume to say I have the answers on that by any means. But what I feel is going on is we're in a place of a great insecurity as a human race. Honestly, we don't know what the next 20 years are going to look like in our world. We've taken for granted the democracy of many countries that is now very much teetering on the edge of totalitarianism and fascism, including this country. And we're, our climate crisis, the greatest threat that humanity has ever faced, and we don't know what's going to happen with that. And so it seems to me, but at the same time, there's also a rise in individual sovereignty, especially for people who have typically been silenced or ignored due to their race or their gender identity, or they're being differently abled or neurodivergent. And so this is a time in which people are really coming into embracing their personal sovereignty and speaking up, given the tools that we have of a lot of times the tools of communication. So I think that the Morrigan, I think that people are attracted to the Morrigan because she represents those things. And one of the funny things about her is that although she's a warrior goddess and many people depict her with weapons in her hands, mm-hmm. she actually never lifts a weapon in any single one of her myths, even the ones that are most focused on warfare. Her weapon is her voice and her strategy. I believe that if she were walking among us right now, I don't necessarily see her on the front lines with a weapon. She would probably be more in the Pentagon, so to speak, in strategizing how we're going to use our resources. Or I would also say she would be a community organizer that's mm-hmm. Organizing with people to resist against a specific oppression. She is definitely drawn to, I'm thinking about the myths, she's drawn to people that are groups that are fighting a very difficult battle, who are not on the winning side so up front, and who don't have as many of the resources, who don't have as much the power, and she is able to push back. But she does it by sharing information and espionage and, you know, using her voice to rally the troops to fight when they start to get tired. So that's one of the very, very interesting, fascinating things about her. And I think that a lot of people are drawn to that. We're now more than ever, the power of our words is so great. When I think about some of the kids from Parkland High School that could bring down entire broadcaster's career with a single tweet asking mm-hmm. for a boycott of their sponsors, and that kind of power is unprecedented mm-hmm. and that with them when it comes to the power of voice. So I think that's why people are drawn to her. They're looking for someone who can relate to what they're going through and also can be of use to them in fighting the battles that they face.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Kathy in chat, she said, you know, she's been hearing a lot of the Morrigan lately, and she's trying to understand what the powerful draw is now. But she also said that she would be a superhero today, fighting for the underdog.
There's a lot of superhero energy in the myths of the Morrigan, especially the ones that are involved with Cuchulainn, who is this great Irish hero. He's kind of a dude bro, and has mysterious patronage, and could fight an entire army by himself. But he was also really full of ego. His downfall was his not recognizing his limitations, and he didn't have many people who could fight him and could strike him down. But the Morgan always did. She was always mm-hmm. able to strike him down, mm-hmm. and so that was pretty funny.
She's good.
Yeah.
So if people are interested in working with her, how do they go about that? I mean, does she sometimes come to people, or do people, call her, or how's that?
You know, I don't remember the first time Morgan came into my life. But what I did long before I formally started this relationship working with her to write this book was I would go to places that I felt might be sacred to her and make an offering in her honor. When I was living in New York City, that for one of those places for me was the 9/11 memorial downtown, mm-hmm. because it was a place where many different kinds of heroes came together, firefighters and mm-hmm. paramedics were their own kind of, and there's certainly strategy and organizing there and trying to save people who had been hurt and fighting a very difficult battle. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite stories about this is I had a friend who had a hard time with money and had been really down in her luck. And so I wanted to give her a nice night where she didn't think about that. And I had this group on to go to this this spa downtown, and we went. And while we were there, someone stole the little cash that she had out of her locker. Mm. And we think that the spa owners were actually in on it. It was a bit of a racket because they refused to accept responsibility, blamed it on her, and then threw us out. Mm. So, and that was I tried to give her some money for groceries. She wouldn't take it, and so I took 3 gold coins, like the dollar coins, down to the memorial and left them in a donation box in honor of the Morgan. And as I did so, I looked up and there were a bunch of crows sitting in the tree watching me. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to take this as a sign that she accepts this. And so I went to and sat by the twin pools and made a prayer to the Morgan. And I said, hey, listen, there's been a real wrong done to a friend of mine. She's a good person, and she, her money was stolen. So I could use your assistance in helping make this right. And a couple of days later, that friend won $3,000 in a lottery at a bar.
Wow.
So the 3 gold coins I offered to the Morgan went back somehow. And I don't want to know what happened to the spa. I would love to know what happened to the spa, but I don't know what happened to the spa. But I suspect things probably did not go very well for them after that. And but yeah. The parallels were uncanny about how she worked to make this right, and it goes to the story that the Morgan does bless, and she can be kind. Mm-hmm. She's not a fairy godmother type creature. I think that's one of the challenges that some modern pagans and witches have with deity is they believe that there's going to be this fairy godmother-like quality to these gods and goddesses, that they show up specifically for the purpose of helping humanity and not asking for anything in return. Because the fairy godmother, I mean, Cinderella was kind of a jerk to her. She just took and didn't like, she just said thank you, but she didn't be like, what can I do for you? How can I find you? How can I make this up to you? She just took the dress and ran. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we think is, and I've seen people treat the gods that way, that it's like, well, they didn't give me what I wanted. Like, yeah, but that's not what their job is. Their job mm-hmm. is to enter relationship with you, or you're not, but that there's opportunity there to enter relationship with each other. And don't treat them like Amazon.com, where you click a button and it just shows up. That's not how they work.
Exactly.
Right? So, there is a matter. And so I would say, that's a long way of answering your question, I would say that for people to find a place in their community, or even create an altar in their home that's designated for the Morgan. And one of the people I interviewed for this recommended, don't just call on her as her warfaring aspect, because that's a lot of very potent energy mm-hmm. that you're getting that it may not manifest in the most productive ways for you. But when you invite all of her in, then she's going to bring the blessings and the beauty along with the challenges that she will ultimately bring as well. Mm-hmm. But these challenges are things that make us stronger. Gods come into our lives. They look around, they say, yeah, this is going to have to go because this is not working for you. Oh no, but I really need this person in my life. They're like, no, they're going to go now. And then you realize later, you know what? Actually, that was the right thing. Didn't feel good, mm-hmm. but certainly, you know, was the right thing. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny. I mean, things keep looking. I mean, I was going to bring up the thing about, you know, having, probably you've been asked a million times about the correlation, if there is one, between the Morgan and Morgan Le Fay. And in the mm-hmm. chat room, Ceiling Cat just wrote, so the story reminds me of Merlin and Morgan Le Fay. Is it all about God, goddess balance?
I am not as versed in the Welsh mythology as so I can't speak a lot to the relationship there. I would say look up the work of Jenna Telendrew. She has a number of books out about the Avalonian mysteries, and so I think that she would certainly speak more to that. There is not a historic connection between Morgan and Morgan Le Fay, the Morgan and Morgan Le Fay. Time-wise, they were really in different millennia. Morgan Le Fay, as we know her, really came out of medieval literature. Mm-hmm. It's possible that she was influenced by earlier goddesses. I don't know, because that's not where my studies have been. Mm-hmm. But the Morgan herself came from Ireland, and a good 1,000 years before the stories about King Arthur were penned. And the biggest links that people have are one in their name, but also with the ravens. But mm-hmm. There were a number of goddesses that shared similar names to Morgan or Morgan Le Fay, and a number of gods all over Europe that were associated with blackbirds and ravens and things like that. So it's mm-hmm. not, there's just not enough of a connection there to say, yes, that definitely happened. Some mm-hmm. people like look at St. Bridget and Bridget saying, oh, well, when Ireland became Christian, Bridget became St. Bridget. So did the Morgan become Morgan Le Fay when Wales became Christian? It's like, no, there's just not enough of a direct line there to say that that's, mm-hmm. that's where it came from. Though, with that being said, though, if individuals are finding those connections in their own spiritual work, something that we call either unique or unverified personal gnosis, that is perfectly valid mm-hmm. for that person. I think it's important to note that historically that they're not there, and not try to create a link that isn't there just out of respect for the source material. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that those two beings aren't appearing to an individual as, you know, as a unified force. There may be something else going on spiritually for them that would require those two goddesses to team up. And, you know, it's possible in our collective unconscious they've developed more of a link than they had a few hundred years ago because we've been asking that question. But historically speaking, no, there's not been a connection between the two.
Okay. Now, if somebody is trying to work with her, are there any specific signs that she's around that people can recognize? I mean, maybe, you know, blackbirds and things, but, you know, each goddess and stuff usually has something specific that is automatically recognizable. But with her, with the Morgan, I mean, she's just so many different things that maybe not that easy to recognize.
Well, blackbirds is certainly a thing that people often experience when they are first bringing her into their lives. For me, it was always nightmares. And that's coming as, you know, one of the Morgan sisters is the Bive, who often brings the warnings of death or things to come. And I often found that for me anyway, the Morgan I would get very frightening nightmares that had very helpful information in them. Mm-hmm. And they had a very specific feel to them. I can't quite describe it. It's just kind of like how you know if a good friend of yours has been in the room. It's like, yeah, that she was here earlier. I smell her cologne or whatever. So that to me is how she first appeared. Mm-hmm. But I think people just know. And honestly, if somebody is drawn to picking up the book, then mm-hmm. she's probably already calling to them too. Yeah. And I would, and I feel like I probably didn't fully answer the last question you had very well, which I said, you know, if you're going to, how do you start working with her? Just tell her you want to work with her, make an mm-hmm. offering, start setting up either some kind of ritual devotion time. Maybe if you have the ability to put an altar in your house, great, do that. If not, mm-hmm. going to a place that you feel is connected with her, cemeteries or, if you're not in Ireland, you don't have the access to the incredible sacred sites, like I said, cemeteries or battlegrounds or, rivers where there's a natural ford, the water's a little more shallow. If you can't figure out where the ford is, just going to the river itself is also a place that's important to her. Hills, those kinds of places, cow pastures, anything like that, or places that you feel really speak to you about her, and mm-hmm. then just go and offer a prayer and say, hey, here I am, and I'm looking forward to getting to know you better. And, you know, she doesn't always turn up immediately. One of the stories I tell in the book is how a man composed a hymn to her, as he called it, and he said it at Beltane, and nothing happened. And so he thought maybe he'd done something wrong. But about 6 months later, he found a really great blessing of the Morgan came to him and changed his life. So mm-hmm. she doesn't, again, this is not Amazon.com where you're going to get it in 2 days with Prime, right? It comes when it mm-hmm. comes, and it comes in its own time.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure she recognizes people that she doesn't want to assist at all. So, you know, I mean, that happens too. But here's one of the things, I mean, in the book, there's lots of rituals, there's spells, there's meditations, and the ritual to summon the shapeshifter Morrigan was quite simple. So, you know, there's a lot of ways in the book, if people are really curious and interested and really want to do this, and you also talk about creating a sacred space for working with her. So, yeah, mm-hmm. The book is a ton full of stuff. It's loaded with things about that. And there's a question from the chat room. Are there certain types of people who need to steer clear of the Morrigan because they're not strong enough to handle her?
I don't know that it's about strength, but I think that there certainly needs to be a surrender of ego. So if an individual isn't ready to look at the tough parts of themselves and pay attention to signs telling them not to go in a specific direction, mm-hmm. then they probably, she may not be the person that they want to go to. I'm hesitant to ever say that somebody shouldn't go near a goddess or god or goddess. Mm-hmm. I think approaching her well, I think that a mistake somebody could make would be approaching her with what they want her to be as opposed to who she is. Mm-hmm. So they hear that she is a fairy goddess, but they're not really connected to what being a fairy means. Yeah. And most pagans today know that fairies are not, you know,
Tinkerbell.
And that they're they're not there to serve humanity, and that they can be very cruel, and mm-hmm. they can cause a lot of problems for you. Yeah. But they can also be a lot of fun, uh-huh. right? But if they were approaching her like a fairy goddess and expecting her to be like Galadriel from Lord of the Rings, that would probably be a poor assumption, and they might find themselves getting a smack in the face. That doesn't mean that they shouldn't. It just means that they set themselves up for what they weren't expecting and perhaps some scary things. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I had, when I was deep in this book, I had a couple of very serious premonitions about some very, about some deaths that would come into my world, one of which was actually a very violent one. Mm. And I clearly she thought I could handle it, and I did, because I'm still here talking about it. I'm not curled up in a ball somewhere. But I think that was also one of the things that I told her is that, you know, I trust that you're not going to take me where I can't handle it. But let's just be mindful of what my limitations are. And I think mm-hmm. all the gods are like that. They mm-hmm. it, I'm not a huge fan of Mother Teresa for a number of reasons, but I do appreciate this one quote that was at least attributed to her, that, like, I know God will won't give me more that I can't handle. I just wish he wouldn't trust me so much. So I sort of feel a little bit like that with the Morgan. Oh, she won't give me more that I can't handle. I just wish she didn't trust me that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to answer that question, I would not tell anyone that they should not approach any god or goddess. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it's best to keep in mind, be very conscious of who she is and her very diverse background, and mm-hmm. be willing to set your ego aside. And it's not about you. You know, you may find yourself being more of a tool in a longer game you don't understand. Mm-hmm. And she's not here to serve you. Right. But if we can all be good with that, then, you know, blessed be y'all. Go for it.
Yeah, and you never know. I mean, because we don't know very much about anything, but we think we do, you know, she might also be the type that sees, not seeks out a person in need, but somehow senses a person in need and will come to them, and maybe even let them know that it's her and whatever. So, you know, it's like The Amazing Race, expect the unexpected. Oh, no, that was Survivor. Never mind. But yeah,
I haven't seen either one, but I totally got what you meant.
Good. you know, one of the other chapters in the book, and we got a little bit of time to talk about this. You do a whole chapter on the shape-shifting goddess because it's one mm-hmm. of her signature traits. So can you talk a little bit about why she does this, how we might recognize it? Because not every blackbird we see is the Morrigan, is it?
No, it's not. And it's so funny. This chapter has stuck with a lot of people, and this was mm-hmm. the chapter I struggled with the most. This was the hardest one, where I thought this was actually the weakest chapter, and more than one person says, nope, this is the one that did it for me. And I'm like, writing is such a weird thing. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, goddesses that could shapeshift were linked to earlier land goddesses, because the land spirits could take many different forms. And so your question was, how do we know if a blackbird is her or not?
Well, no, I mean, just how might we recognize her if she does shapeshift? Because, I mean, she it's obviously, it's not just a bird that she turns. I mean, if you're a shapeshifter.
Yeah, she turns into an eel and into a heifer.
Yeah.
And she would sometimes, she could transform, one of the Morgan sisters transforms herself into a leper in order to trick her enemies. Mm-hmm. And one of, and the Morgan once, and when she met Cucullin at the forge, she dressed up as a princess and told him she was a king's daughter. And he's like, yeah, you know, yeah, no way. So, mm-hmm. so she could do a lot of that. But, you know, how do we know if she's, I think it's less about the animals that we see and more about the attitudes that we bring to the work that we do. And that's one of the greatest gifts that she gave me, is the ability to shift my story. Mm-hmm. And that to be a shapeshifter myself, it doesn't mean me turning into a bird or an eel, although that'd be pretty cool.
It'd be
slippery. Yeah. But I know I was very upset about a situation at work. And I went to the Morgan and I was like, what do I do? And she's like, well, just change something else. Don't be the person whose feelings got hurt. Be the person who said, wait, that was actually incorrect, and change the narrative. And so mm-hmm. that was a great gift to me, is that I could say, I don't have to be in this role of the person who was ignored and the person who was insulted and whose feelings felt bad. So I'm going to change it into knock on the door. Hey, you know, actually you missed somebody in your roll call of great people doing this work right now. You know, pay attention to me. You are wrong, not me. I didn't do anything wrong. You forgot me. Mm-hmm. And that was an important shift for me, honestly. So I think it's the greatest way of seeing how the Morgan shape shifts is showing us how to do it. Mm-hmm. And as for, you know, seeing animal signs or things like that, like I wrote a book, I live out in the country, and so I'm always seeing different kinds of birds. And if every time I saw a blackbird that heralded a death, then I would only go to funerals like every day, and I don't. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah. I think it's that when the animal appears in a way that's unusual, mm-hmm. like I don't end up with a lot of birds in my yard because I have this very large dog. So they stay away from my yard. But if mm-hmm. I were to look outside and see a bunch of blackbirds standing in the yard, I go, okay, that's unusual. Mm-hmm. Because what are they doing down there? There's nothing for them there, and they know I have a very large dog who likes to chase birds.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a neighborhood cat that prowls. So they, you know, my place is not a safe place for birds to be on the ground generally.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, for me, a sign something is up. When I was living in New York, I didn't hear many crows. Most of the birds we hear in New York, hear and see in New York were pigeons or hawks.
Mm-hmm.
So a crow was unusual. And on saw one morning, I woke up and I was in the shower and I heard a crow. I heard two crows caw very loudly, one close to my window and one far away.
Mm-hmm.
And I just knew that was Morgan saying, you're going to lose two people this year, one close to you and one not so close to you. And that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That I did experience two deaths that year. One of them was somebody I was close to.
Yeah.
So that I think that's to me when it happens and it's unusual. Like that's not where I would normally see that creature.
Right.
Yeah. You know.
Makes sense. All right. Well, as usual, I've got more things to be brought up than we have time to cover. So I think the only solution for this is for people who want to know more to get the book. And they can get all the info about the book and your other books, your decks, your tarot classes and appearances and contact information at your website, which is, ta-da.
Nope. It's CourtneyAWeber.com. And that's with Weber with one B, not two. I will be at PaganaCon in Minneapolis in March talking about the Morgan. And then I will be at Between the Worlds in April talking about Bridget and the Morgan. So I would love to see people there. I also have started a podcast of my own with my two best friends called That Witch Life. So if you want to hear three maniacs talk about witchcraft and make complete fools of themselves, but also bring on really great guests, that's another option for folks out there.
Perfect.
And yeah, I'm constantly online. So it's, you know, certainly find me on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram. If you follow me on Instagram, my handle is The Cocoa Witch, and I post pictures of my really cute dog almost every day. So that's probably where most people want to go. So definitely follow me on Instagram to see Ichabod, the rescue dog.
Yay. All right. Well, thank you for sharing another wonderful book. And I'm waiting for the next one, and we'll invite you back, definitely. And
great.
And you can come back anytime you want to. You just knock, 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 and I'll let you do it.
You'll let me in?
I'll let you in, I promise, yes. And we also have to thank the listeners who are either live right now or listening to podcasts on the website and all kinds of places. And also YouTube page. The show has a new YouTube page called Stirring the Cauldron Para X, new YouTube channel, rather. And if you're listening over there, please subscribe and share and ring the bell so that it'll let you know when there's more podcasts uploaded. And that being said, good night, everybody. Blessed be, and merry meet again.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2019. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompotech.com.